This is an interview with Kay White. It's taking place in Glebe. The date is the 9th of October 2007. The project is the City of Sydney's oral history project about horses in inner Sydney, and it's Margot Beasley interviewing. So, Kate, if you don't mind, perhaps you might tell me when you were born.
Oh, September 1938.
And I think you grew up in Glebe from, presumably you were more or less born in Glebe, is that correct?
Yes, I was born in Glebe and then, lived here until early 60s and then moved away. But so, yes, I was growing up during the war years in Sydney.
Mm. And where were you living in Glebe when you were a little girl?
I was living in a place called Christie Street, which does not exist anymore. I think council flats are there now, or Department of Housing flats.
But the street itself is completely gone.
The street is gone. The surrounding streets are still there, but the street where I lived has disappeared.
Where was it?
It was between Cowper Street and Bay Street, down towards the government garage near Wentworth Park. Government garage building is still there, but now it belongs to actually showrooms and things like that now.
Hmm. So what are your earliest memories of Christie Street?
Oh, Christie Street. I love Christie Street. It was a very community-minded street where people helped each other out. Nobody had much. The Depression had just finished. War had started. And, yes, I'm going to get very teary if I start talking about the war years. Yeah, people just helped people out. And the corner shop was wonderful. It was run by Mrs. Tibbs. Most people would just tick their things up on the book. You go up and get things on the book and then pay at the end of the week or whenever the money came in. And, of course, we had our coupons, our ration coupons, with the butter and bread and whatever Mrs. Tibbs sold. And what else can I tell you about Christie Street? It was described by one historian as being the most dreariest street in Glebe until I spoke to him and said that, no, it was one of the most colourful streets in Glebe, because in that street there were the Browns, these are family names, the Browns, the Greens, the Greys, the Whites and the Blacks, and they all lived in Christie Street. So, actually, I think I put him on the right track.
Why would he have described it as a dreary street?
Most probably because of the houses. The houses didn't have any verandas. They just opened, the front doors just opened onto the footpath. And also because in those days, in the heart of Sydney, where most people would have had electricity, we only had gas light downstairs and kerosene lamps upstairs. Of course, there was no bathroom. It was just a wash house at the back. And fuel stoves. And, yes, just little tiny backyards. But it wasn't the houses that made the street. It was the people. Mm. And the person, the historian, was actually thinking of the houses that made the street.
Mm. So he was describing the sort of physical fabric of the place rather than the emotional and community life.
Yes, it was more like a Coronation Street type place because there was the Irish woman there and there was the Indian man, like men from India, and we were Scottish and English. And, yes, a mixture of people and different cultures as well.
Mm. It sounds as though it was that the housing and perhaps the community itself there was what you might think of as a fairly typical inner-city working-class street. I know a lot of working-class houses, probably until well after the war, were rather, as you describe them, perhaps some of them had electricity, yours didn't, but wash house out the back, there were no internal bathrooms, they were tiny and you stepped straight onto the street. There was not that luxury of space that you got in more expensive housing.
Mm. Mm. That's right, but we didn't actually need that space because, I suppose, winter perhaps we might have, but in summer we were always out. We didn't stay. We came home at night to have meals and things like that, but mostly we were out.
You mean the kids?
I mean the kids, yes.
And where were you when you were out?
Oh, down the park playing, down Wentworth Park, or over Victoria Park, which was a wonderful place to go to in those days, even though they didn't have the pool. They still had the pond, which was a natural pond with big rocks around it and kind of weeping willows hanging into it and collecting tadpoles there was just magic stuff.
Did you swim there?
We weren't allowed to swim there, but we paddled.
Anyway.
We did, yes. And then there's also the markets. The markets were
at Haymarket.
At Haymarket, yes. Of course, it's all changed now. It was down at the the Powerhouse Museum was the powerhouse where the trams came there, and the markets were just there. And
you mean
they were so different to what they are now?
You're talking about Paddy's Markets.
I'm talking about Paddy's Markets. Mm. They were so different to what they are now because most of the storeholders would have made the things that they were selling, or it was kind of vegetables and people selling chickens and puppies and things like that. So it was a smaller place, but a much friendlier, not as commercial, not as money grabbing. It seemed to me is what it is now.
This project is actually about horses, but the other day you told me a rather cute story about what your older brothers did with you in the markets and the little chickens.
Oh, yes. I have brothers who were 10, 12 years older than I am, and my mother used to trust them to mind me.
And you were just a tiny girl.
I was only about three. And I remember this day that they supplied me with a shoebox that had a lid on, of course, and holes poked in the top. And they took me to the markets, and they knew that I just loved chickens, little yellow fluffy chickens. And they said to me that when the man had turned away, then I was to grab one of these little yellow chickens and put it into the shoebox. And if the man turned round and saw me with these little fluffy chickens, I was just to smile at him and pretend I was playing with them. So I ended up with four or five chickens. And then I was left sitting on a bench while they went scaling trams. And, I mean, being 3 years old and being left down the markets, and, of course, in those days it was, I suppose it was quite safe, even though there were a lot of Chinese people around and there was a lot of strangers around down in the country, it was still safe for me to sit there with my chickens.
Did the man ever see you with the chickens?
I smiled at him a few times.
And he thought, oh, she's just playing with them.
Yes. Oh, yes, I had to hide the box down below the counter, I was told. I was given instructions on what to do. So after that grand larceny, I went home to Mum, and my brothers told Mum that the man had given me the chickens. Mm. So Mum had a hot house brick, which she wrapped in a jumper, an old jumper, and one of them survived. He survived for a while.
So the house brick in the jumper was to keep them warm, as if they were with their own mother.
Mm. Mm. Yes, and then, so I don't know what his name was. I don't think he had a name, but I'll call him Rodney, the rooster. Lived for quite a while until he pecked my father, who then, in temper, wrung his neck. And, yes, he was delicious.
He ended up on the table,
On the table, yes. And I remember when they were plucking him, they said that, we won't tell Kay because, you know, she'd be so sad. I wasn't sad, and I never ever told them that I knew that it was our rooster or my chicken.
And how much you enjoyed them.
Yes, it was the best chicken ever.
The lunch, yeah. And when you talked about your brother scaling trams, that was a pretty common laugh, particularly amongst boys, I think.
Oh, yes, they all did.
So what was scaling trams?
Scaling trams was when the tram came past and conductor would be up one end, then the boys would jump on the other end because they had running boards. The trams had running boards, and they'd grab a railing and jump on, and then as a conductor came back, they would jump off. Mm.
So it's basically getting a free ride and getting away with it.
Getting a free ride, waiting for the next tram to come along, jumping on that one. Yeah, it was just like jumping on a, I don't know, because we used to jump on a merry-go-round as it was going around and things like that. So it was having a free ride.
Mm. Mm. But more about skylarking than actually going from point A to point B.
Oh, yes, they weren't going anywhere. No,
they were just having fun.
But it was quite dangerous. One of my brothers actually broke his leg twice. Not on the one journey, but in different times. Yes.
Mm. Okay, so now back to the issue at hand. The horses, yes. And horses were a really commonplace sight in Glebe in your childhood.
Oh, they were. Because of the war years and because of there wasn't petrol around and, of course, they needed the tyres, like rubber, for overseas for the war effort. We had horse and carts. So I didn't grow up knowing motor carts. I mean, I grew up just with horse and carts. So it was kind of like having gas light and horse and carts. It was like living back in the 19th century rather than in the 20th century.
I mean, you make the point that horses were widely used during World War II for all sorts of reasons, including most important reason being shortage of resources. Mm. And perhaps just preceding that. I mean, cars were certainly around before the war.
Oh, yes.
And during the war. But I think what you're saying is that horses, perhaps a lot of horses were actually brought back into service because of the war.
That's right. So we had horses taking things to Paddy's markets, like vegetables or whatever they were selling, the vegetables to Paddy's markets. And then also we had, of course, I think most people would have had the milkman with this Clydesdale horse. And the Iceman.
So the Iceman, did you have an ice box at your place?
Yes, an old one, yes, where the ice would go on the top. Yes,
And then it would drip down over several days.
Yes, and some people, I'm not quite sure whether my mum and dad did it or not, they'd actually add salt to it so that the ice didn't melt as quickly.
What, coated in salt?
Coarse salt. Mm. And
so what the on the Iceman's cart, he would have one horse, presumably, probably a Clydesdale or some other kind of draft horse?
Well, actually, the Iceman used to come really early in the morning, I suppose, so his ice wouldn't melt. So I didn't actually ever notice his horse and cart because I'd be inside the house having breakfast or something like that. But with the milkman came earlier, but I do remember him because I used to go out and chat to the milkman.
Oh, did you?
I liked him. And I liked his horse because his horse knew when to stop. And his horse always stopped at the front of our place. And then as the milkman walked down, then the horse would follow down or go and wait. Actually, the horse would go and wait for the milkman to catch up to him.
Mm. Yeah, somebody's pointed that out to me, that in some ways horse delivery is more efficient than motor vehicle for that reason, that the horse can follow the person who's doing the deliveries or wait for the person who's delivering, and it can be trained to stop at particular points. Probably the Iceman's horse did that as well.
Yeah, I would say he would have done. Mm.
And how was the Iceman?
But then the Iceman only come once a week, see, whereas the milkman came every day. So therefore his horse might not have known the stops as much as what the milkman's horse did.
So you don't actually remember ever witnessing the Iceman's cart?
No, I don't remember.
I was just wondering how the ice was kept frozen.
Yes, I don't know whether it would have been closed. Naturally, it would have been closed.
I think it may have been wrapped in hessian as well.
Mm. Mm. Because, yes, that's right, because when the Iceman would come in, he'd come into the kitchen and he would have like a leather apron on, and I think he did have a hessian bag, yeah, with the ice in it.
Mm, and possibly large tongs to lift it as well, I'm not sure.
Oh, those big pick type.
Yes, they'd actually cut into the ice and hold the block steady. So when you were running around, like if you ran down to Paddy's Market, there'd be horses all over the place, I suppose.
Oh, there were so many. Yes, I just didn't notice horses so much because they were such a daily part of life. They were there. Mm. I noticed it when they went. Mm. When they went, it was like the streets are empty again because people didn't own cars either very much. Not in Glebe, not in this area. There was one man that owned a car. He was the head of something to do with Wentworth Park. And so he had a car with a running board on. And I remember the first time I had a ride on his car was when I was about 7 years old, just after the war finished.
Was that on the running board?
Jumped on the running board and he let us kids ride on the running board.
He must have been quite friendly then.
Yeah, he was a nice man.
Mm. Now, what about other horses and carts? You've told me that other things were delivered also.
Oh, yes, we had the Botlo man. He would come around.
And what happened with him? What was his
job? The Botlo, because we got money for bottles, they're all recycled, well, reused, I mean, in those days. They'd be taken away and washed. Not recycled as we know today.
And you were given money back, weren't you?
Oh, no, that was for drink bottles. But for ordinary bottles, like beer bottles or any other household bottles, we would stack them up against the wall in our side passage, and the bottle man would come along, and he might come once a month or something, and he'd look at what we had and he'd offer us a price for whatever he thought was reasonable. But my mother always had another idea of what she thought was reasonable.
Mm. And so there'd be a bit of upping and downing of price, well, wasn't there?
There should have been, but the thing is I was left in charge, and only being very young, I should just take what he gave me.
And I think you said the soft drink?
Oh, yeah, we had Sharp Brothers. They used to come along, and they were in what do they call those things? Not Jimmy. They were
Demijohns.
Demijohns, yes. They didn't come in bottles. They came in Demijohns, and they had like a seal on the top, this kind of screwy type thing. And it was aerated to begin with, but after a few days, it would be kind of flat. Wouldn't be quite as nice. And the Demijohns would keep it cold because, as I said, we didn't have refrigeration and the Demijohns wouldn't fit into the icebox. So they just kept cold in
the Demijohns would keep it cool. Mm. And so it was an aerated soft drink, a bit like what kids would drink today, but not as fizzy, perhaps.
Yes, perhaps. Well, because it had such a large opening in the top, in the neck, that perhaps more of the aeration or bubbles got out.
Escaped, yes. Yeah. Mm.
Another thing we used to love doing was the ice cream man on a Sunday. And he'd come around. His name was Joe. And he was Italian or Greek, I'm not sure. And he had a cart, a bit like a carnival type cart, like with frilly things on the top. And he'd ring a bell and we'd go down. That's where we used to buy our ice cream because the shops would be closed on a Sunday. And we didn't buy ice cream like you buy it now in containers. We'd buy an ice cream brick, which was like ice cream in cardboard, but shaped like a house brick. And he would keep his ice cream cold in great big green bags, which was full of dry ice. Mm. He'd also sell ice cream buckets. So it'd be ice cream buckets or ice cream bricks.
What were ice cream buckets?
Ice cream buckets are those little tiny buckets.
Little cone.
Yeah. A little tiny container.
Oh, a little cardboard container. Yes. Yes, that you could just eat out with a spoon.
Mm.
But the brick presumably would be sold to have with Sunday lunch.
Oh, that was with our Sunday lunch, yes.
Because Sunday lunch was still then quite a big deal, wasn't it?
Oh, yes.
Most households.
Yes, everyone. Yes, if you walk down the street on a Sunday, you'd smell baked lamb cooking, roast lamb, I should say, I suppose. With the ice cream man, there was something. Oh, yes, the ice cream man coming on the Sunday for the Sunday lunch was good because the thing is, we couldn't have kept ice cream anyway because we didn't have a refrigerator, so
it had to be eaten on the spot. Mm. So what was the icebox used for then, if you didn't?
Oh, it was just to keep the milk fresh and the butter and meat.
Meat, perhaps.
The meat, most probably, we bought, whenever, every second day or every day. And jam and things that need to be kept cool, we kept in.
But only in small quantities.
Ah, yes,
So would your mother have done most of her household shopping? Would that have come off the back of carts pulled by horses?
Other people's mothers would have bought things like that, like the bread being delivered and the... well, the milk was always delivered, so we got milk and we got ice. And the fruit man would come along, fruit and veggie man. He would come along with his horse and cart, selling fruit and vegetables. The other little housewives would run out and, choose over what they wanted. We had the Rabideau man coming.
Oh, yes, tell me about the Rabideau man, because that was a real feature of working class.
Oh, the Rabideau man was, Sydney life. We always had rabbit, which is now more expensive than chicken, I think. Much more expensive than chicken. The Rabideau man coming around singing out, Rabideau, and... Yeah, and you just run out and get your rabbits.
So he'd have the carcasses on the on his cart?
And he had a little tiny, very small, kind of cart thing on the back. Yeah.
So it was enclosed to keep the flies off, presumably.
Keep the flies off, to keep the rabbits cold, because he would have had the dry ice. All those would have had dry ice, I think, in bags.
Mm. And were the rabbits skinned when you bought them?
Rabbits were skinned when we got them, and
so they were ready, prepared to be cooked.
Yes, and they were lovely and clean. Yes, my father used to be the rabbit man. He'd go out there and inspect the rabbits. Yeah.
And
oh, no, it was not that he was the rabbit man. He didn't come around selling the rabbits. Went out.
Rabbits were very strongly associated with working class life, weren't they? Because they were such cheap food and very nutritious.
And we used them in different ways too. We had like baked rabbit. Or we'd have rabbit stew, or we'd have, like, my father used to do this one thing, rabbits stuffed with prunes.
That's fancy.
Which was very nice, yeah. So my father spent a lot of time in France, so he knew lots of things about cooking.
Mm. We haven't actually talked about your family, but perhaps you could tell me a bit about your mother and father.
My mother was born in Edinburgh. She was born in Fife. And after the First World War, she came out to, well, didn't come to Australia, she went to New Zealand. She came out through the Panama Canal and caught into Pitcairn Island. And I remember her telling me that everyone there was a Christian. And I thought, well, what's different about that? People in Australia are Christians too. But I didn't realise that she meant all their surnames were Christians, that they were all Christians. And then she went to somewhere else, which was very unusual, before she went to New Zealand. And she went to Dunedin, of course. That's where all the Scottish people went. She came out by herself. She travelled out by herself.
And, as a young single woman.
Yes. And she had a wonderful time. She then went working, like on a working holiday, travelling around New Zealand, working just at any job she could get, like in hotels, like a cook or waitress or whatever she could do.
So this housemaid. This is quite some time before the war then.
This is after the First World War. This is most probably the 1920. Mm-hmm. And then she came over here to Australia, still on a working holiday, because she did intend to go back to Scotland, but she didn't get there. And then she worked in places like Ralston and Parks, still in hotels. And she just loved travelling and loved that kind of work. I mean, when she was in Edinburgh, she used to be a secretary, like a shorthand type. So shorthand bookkeeping, I'm not sure it was typing. So she felt like she had got out and she was free from the office. She then came back to work in Sydney, most probably to continue to go elsewhere, and she was working at the Metropole Hotel. My father came out here just after the war.
World War One,
yes, I'm sorry. And he came out and to make a house or make a home for his wife and child, but then she met somebody else on the boat. So that was...
This is his first wife.
Yes, so that was that. And he came down to Sydney and he went to the Metropole Hotel and that's where he met my mother.
Mm. So where was your father from?
Sorry, my father was born in Croydon, just outside of London, in 1887. And the thing is, in those days, you could still hear the Bow Bells, so he was classified as a Cockney. Yeah.
And so he met your mother here.
Yes.
And eventually they got together and had a family.
Yes.
And what kind of work did he do when you were a little girl?
When I was a little girl, he always had an army career, but then when I was little he came out to Australia and the Depression and things were on, and I think during the Depression he mended people's shoes for them to make money. And also I remember him telling me that he helped build the steps at St Mary's Cathedral. Mm-hmm. And Mum used to do dressmaking during the Depression, and then she got a job as a pastry cook at Grace Brothers Broadway. Dad got a job, I think, in the tramway department as a cleaner. And, yes, and by that time he was quite old anyway, when you think he must have been about nearly 60 in those days.
He was quite a bit older than your mother, I think.
He was older than Mum, yes. Mum was about 40. I'm a twin. Mum was about 40 when Alan and I were born. And Dad would have been close to 60. So, yeah, so I mean, actually, he told my mother he was younger than what he was. Yes. So, therefore, when we thought he was 65, he was really 75. Mm.
And he knew how to cook?
He was the best cook.
Was he?
Yes. Mm. And he used to say to my mother, if Mum was cooking something, there are cooks and there are cookers. And that's all I'm saying. Yes, so there'd be kind of a few arguments over who was going to cook. Yeah.
But your mother had probably picked up a few cooking tips working in hospitality.
Mum was a great pastry cook. She could cook lovely pies and things like that, but Dad did lovely rolled shoulders I can't think of the word, veal rolled shoulders, you know, with seasoning. And yes, he was more of a... more of a chef than a cook, I should imagine.
He liked the fancy stuff.
Yes, that's right, yes.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned to me before that on another time when we were talking, that the Christie Street itself, where you were when you were little and during the war years, it was actually too small for horses and carts to come down.
Yes, we didn't get any horses and carts there. I think perhaps if they knew the fruit man was coming, the fruit and veggie man was coming, that they knew where he would be on a certain day, and they would hear him, and they would go down to the next street, which is a wider street, and they'd get their things there.
And possibly, yes, possibly he'd sing out anyway. Mm. Well, certainly the bottlers all, they had a cry, didn't they?
Yes.
And perhaps the others did.
Yes, same as the rabbit
as
man.
As well.
Mm. Mm. Yeah. And, of course, the ice cream man always rang his bell. It was a great big bell, like one of those old school bells. Mm.
Yeah. Sounds a bit like the ice cream man was generating a bit of a carnival atmosphere with the gaily coloured wagon. Mm. And
yeah, it was. It wasn't a carnival atmosphere. And I always remember how sad it was when he stopped coming. But then by the time I was about 12, we had our refrigerator, and I suppose other people had got them before us. We were always the last to get anything. And I suppose he wasn't needed anymore.
Hmm. Yes, he probably just went out.
Or perhaps his horse died.
Mm. You could always get another horse.
Mm.
And now what about around Glebe? Are there remnants of horses around here, like stables?
Mm, there are. On Glebe Point Road, Cole Joy Studio, which is on Glebe Point Road, I can't remember the number.
Whereabouts on
Glebe Point Road between Mitchell Street and St John's Road. It's
on
actually
the northern side then of
Glebe
Point
Road. Yes, and also it's, no, not the northern side, on the southern side.
Okay.
Hmm. There were stables in the back there. I think they were mainly for trotters. And there are stables up in Catherine Street. Now, I'm not sure, but I think they were for trotting users too, because Harold Park's quite close by. But there were some working class stables down in Wentworth Street, and I always thought it was very unusual that the two biggest houses in the Wentworth Street, which were the only two houses there on the one side of the street, belonged to people called Brown and Smith. And I imagine that, you know, they might have had posher names than that. And they had stables there, and I think they were for working horses, working class horses.
working horses, yes. Yes, you mean they were probably middle-class people, but with working horses of their own, you mean?
Yes.
Because there would still also be around Glebe, I guess, like other parts of the inner city, you can see besides some of the larger terraces, the carriageway, where the carriage would go through.
Mm.
So there would have been stables out the back where horses were kept strictly for private transport purposes.
Now, you'd find that mostly at Glebe Point, because Glebe Point was where the wealthy people moved to live after being down at Circular Quay, and Glebe being reasonably close, that they kind of had big houses put here for holiday houses to begin with, or not for holiday houses, but to get away from the squalor of the rocks and the Circular Quay. Yes, they moved to Glebe. And which was quite a way from Circular Quay in those days.
Mm.
I mean, by horse and cart. Mm. And my husband's old grandmother remembers them rolling out the red carpet for people who were going to balls up there in those grand houses in Glebe Point.
Oh, that right. So they'd arrive in their
carriages. Yes.
Their feet wouldn't have to touch the dirt.
That's right. Mm. Yes. There's an old milestone, more or less, not milestones, I suppose it's called an old milestone, up on the corner of Glebe Point Road, which says that that's the end of the city, more or less. That's where the city finishes. Mm. Mm. And then it was, I think, 12, 15 miles to Parramatta.
Mm. So many of the horses that were actually stabled around here were trotters.
Mm.
For Harold Park?
The Harold Park Paceway, yes.
But otherwise, you think it was a relative rarity for people to actually own their own horses around Glebe when you were a child?
That's right. People didn't own their own horses. The yards, they didn't have room for them. And if they did own them, perhaps they might have had them stabled somewhere else, but none of my friends owned horses. But we used to have a man coming around a few times. When I say a few times, I mean once every 6 months. And he'd set up on, we used to have what we'd call a paddock, but which really had been like an old building that had burnt down and the land cleared. And he would set up on this paddock and with ropes going in a circular thing making. And he'd have horses and you'd pay to have a ride on the horse. And that was quite exciting. I liked that.
So did you have a ride on those horses?
Definitely, yes. And I think I was Annie Oakley or somebody.
They must have been well-behaved horses if the kids could just jump on them.
I think they were very, very old horses, yeah. But it was great. It was nice.
Was that your only contact with horses when you were a kid? I mean, apart from seeing all the horses that were working horses around here that were pulling carts with vegetables or whatever, did you ever have a ride on any other kind of horse?
No. Oh, merry-go-round horses. Yes, definitely then.
Another kind of horse.
And when the show first opened, I think I might have been about 8 years old, when the show, Easter show, opened.
Royal Agricultural Show.
Yes. I remember going out there and touching a horse, and his ears went back, and I was told then that he was angry with me, so it kind of made me a bit frightened of horses.
So you didn't touch the ones that were...
No, they were too busy.
They were just working.
Yeah, unless they had... Because we had horse troughs around, which were really interesting. I really loved the horse troughs. They were good on a hot day as well to dunk in. And, of course, if a horse was having a drink there, then you might touch him on his muzzle.
So there would have been quite a lot of horse troughs there would have had to have been so that the horses could drink.
Well, I just remember there was one at Wentworth Park Road and there was one in St John's Road up across the road from the church. Those were the two I knew of. And I think at Broadway, near Parramatta Road rather than George Street, I think it was a horse trough there.
So when you say that there are a lot of horses around because of the war, you think, you know, well, what I'm getting at is perhaps somebody actually told you that there were fewer houses just before the war. Because you were born in 38, you wouldn't actually remember that period.
Fewer horses?
Yeah, you must have had some reason for thinking there were more in the area.
I just knew there were horses. I didn't know anything about more or less. I just knew that there were horses and there weren't any cars or trucks.
Or very few.
I don't remember any cars or trucks.
As a little girl. Not even on Glen Point Road or
no.
the city?
No, we had trams and things. Of course, when I was about 6 or 7, I remember getting taxis and things because they were kind of... Yeah, but when I was little, I don't remember cars. No. We used to play in the middle of Wentworth Park Road. We'd play hopscotch in the middle of Wentworth Park Road. I mean, there's no way you'd be able to do that today or of cars becoming. And I remember after the war had finished that we used to sing call out, oh, there's a car coming, and we'd all get off the road. And we'd then play for another half hour and a bit. Car coming, and then we'd have to get off the road again. So there weren't any cars really around.
And you said, though, that when the war ended, you felt the absence of horses, but it was still very quiet even so.
Yes, it was. Even though the horses weren't there, it was still very quiet. We had lorries. I don't know why we called them lorries. I mean, people don't call them lorries now, but they used to call them lorries and trucks. I don't know what the difference was or if there even was a difference. One thing I haven't mentioned to you is about the American soldiers being stationed down Whitworth Park.
Oh, yes.
They were there for R&R in the Pacific. And
were they intense?
Very intense. They were, they were intense in the middle of Wentworth Park Road, and they had their own...
actually, in the middle of Wentworth Park.
In the dog
where
track.
The dog, yeah.
And they had their own movies there, like a big open door screen, which us kids used to sneak in and have a look at. And they added a lot to my life as a child. And then I came home from school one time when I was about 6 or 7, and they'd gone. And so that was sad. That was very sad for me because they used to give us chewing gum and as they went past on the train lines where the light rail goes now down at Wentworth Park, they would throw biscuits and lollies to us, us poor little children.
So when you say they added a lot to your life when you were a child, that's the kind of thing that you mean, that they, little gifts.
Yeah, little gifts, and also we used to have... sneak in and they'd chase us and put us out, and so it was all exciting about being chased and not being allowed in there and sneaking in and just doing things that children do or did in those days, which was innocent fun.
You had a lot of freedom when you were very small, didn't you?
Oh, yes. It wouldn't happen. I mean, as we all know, it doesn't happen nowadays. I mean, the children are kind of kept caged because, no, we could go anywhere or do anything.
Well, it sounds like you were doing it from the age of about 3.
Yes, that's right. We're big brothers looking after me very carefully. Another thing we used to do too, it's nothing to do with horses, but we'd go down to Pyrmont Wharves and go on the ships.
What do you mean go on the ships?
Well, the ships that were going overseas, we could sneak on to them. Mm.
And what, just have a look around?
And have a look around and pretend we're going to stow away and things. Yeah.
That would have been a lot of fun.
It was.
On those big, these were passenger liners.
Yes, thing, yeah. Mm. I mean, they weren't as big as the Queen Mary or the QE2, but they were big. Mm. And that was exciting. And also swinging on the rope over the Darling Harbour train lines, that was really, really fun. Mm.
Sounds a bit hair-raising.
Yeah, but they're the kind of things we used to like doing. Mm. Or riding on the back of the horses too, but not horses, but on the back of the carts. We used to grab a hold of the back of the cart and put our feet up underneath the cart. There used to be a little bar, and get a bit of a free ride too, a bit like scaling trams, but scaling horse and carts.
Did the drivers ever get annoyed with you?
Well, there was one man, but we used to try and give him a miss. He'd whip, or not actually whip us, but he'd put his whip into the air and aim it at us. He used to miss. I don't know whether he actually went to whip us or not, but he didn't get anyone. Mm.
But it scared you off, presumably.
Scared off his truck. Mm.
But not,
well, not
others.
Truck. The horse and cart, off his cart. Mm. Mm.
So are there other things like that you can remember about the horses? What about the horse poo? What happened to the dog?
I don't know. I think I mentioned that to someone the other day, and I just remember, I don't know what happened to the horse poo. I don't really remember anyone coming along Wentworth Park Road with a broom and a shovel or picking it up, but I do remember a lot of horse poo around, but I don't know whether I even thought anything much about the horse poo.
People didn't scoop it up and put it on their garden.
Most probably that's where it went. Not that too many people had gardens, because living in Glebe, I don't think I ever saw a flower. Mm. And when I went to Glebe school, I remember the teacher saying, when I was in about third class, there aren't any trees in Glebe. And I remember putting my hand up saying, yes, there are. There are two. There are two down Wentworth Park Road.
Mm. I'm sure there were some down on Glebe Point.
Could have been, but I didn't go down Glebe Point. That wasn't my area.
It was out of your territory.
Yes.
Anything else you'd like to talk about? That's been pretty comprehensive.
Mm. I can't think of the moment.
You're back in Glebe after a really long time.
Yes, we moved away in the 60s and bought a pub in Mudgee. So I was up there for nearly 20 years, not in the hotel. We were in the hotel for about 8 years, and then I came back about 1984. Mum was very sick. My boys were going to university, Sydney University, and I just wanted to be near them and my mother, to give them more support.
So you've been in Glebe ever since then?
No, I was in Coogee for 5 years. This is where I became addicted to the surf and the beach. Then I've been back here since about 1990. And, yeah.
So how do you find it relative to your childhood?
Well, actually, it's good, because there are still lots of people in Glebe that were here when I was a child. The woman who works in the fruit shop I went to school with. So there's a lot of people who still know me. Actually, they are thinning out, but there are still a lot of people.
Oh, that must have been rather nice, because it's a suburb that's undergone a huge amount of change.
Mm. But it still has that village atmosphere, because it's at Point. I suppose that's the reason why. But the man in the fruit shop who's runs a fruit shop up in Glebe Point Road, actually went to school with my brother in the 1930s. Mm.
Oh, that's nice.
Yes.
Mm. A nice little it's nice. Circle. Mm.
And when I first moved into this house, I was out painting my front veranda, and this woman went past, and she said to me, pardon me, you're very lucky having a house. And I said, yes, I know. And I said, but I have lived in Glebe before. Well, who are you? And I said, I'm Mrs. White's daughter. And she said to me, oh, you must be one of the twins. So it was nice. Lovely, yes, it was really nice.
Have you seen any horses in Glebe this time round, since you came back in 1990?
No, I don't recall, and most probably I'm not looking for them.
Mm. I think, in fact, there may be one or two even now still stable down at Victoria Park, down the end on the point, that are trotters for Harold Park.
Not Victoria Park, Jubilee.
Jubilee Park.
Mm. Mm. Yeah. Oh, yes, I think they are down there, but I don't go.
It's not your territory.
Still out of my area.
Still not your territory.
And, of course, if I go down that area, I always head towards the other way, which is a nice walk going around by the fish markets. I can't think of anything else. As soon as you go, I'll think of lots of things I should have said to you.
Oh, no, that's fine. That was lovely. Thanks very much.